Hey, it's you, man, from KC95 here. Good evening and welcome to Toasted Tavern. Your host, Scott Tobin, and the man called Wags are ready to bring you the night in sports. So pull up a stool, grab a drink, and let's get toasted.
Oh, that is a voice I have longed to hear. It's been a bit, but John Hewlett bringing us into tonight's edition of the Toasted Tavern. I am Wags, joined alongside by my buddy Scott Tobin as we get you set for everything going on tonight. A couple of late night starts for the Cardinals and the Blues, but both big time games. It's NHL playoff time. It's West Coast baseball against a very good team in the San Francisco Giants. Plenty of things going on here on this Friday. Oh yeah, a movie that came out today that it sounded like it's going to be pretty good. But before we get to all of that, I'm going to say hello to my buddy Scott. It's been a while. We missed each other at the Cardinals game on Sunday, and we've missed each other for the last couple weeks, but things are starting to change, and I think we're going to see a little bit too much of each other here in the next couple weeks.
Oh, yeah. People are really excited about that. They're like, oh, crap. They're back. Yeah, man, it's good to be back. We literally had to have a conversation about how to put headphones on when we started the show because we hadn't done it in so long. But yeah, there's a lot to talk about. And, we need to talk sports because this weather is crazy. And we're going to go from 56 and rain today to 93 or something on Tuesday. So welcome to St. Louis and the end of spring, start of summer.
Yeah, it's absolutely wonderful. I got to call a soccer game last night over at Lafayette, and it was perfect weather for soccer. It was that nice, crisp 60-ish degrees, a little bit of chill to the air, a good sunset out there, and it was beautiful. And I was talking with my partner, Bob Richards, and we're like, yeah, it's great tonight. Next week, it's going to be in the 90s. Not very conducive to soccer or really any sport because it's brutally hot here in St. Louis. But yeah, we got to talk sports because the weather right now sucks. But sports in general for those in the Midwest actually are pretty good. I mean, you've got the Cardinals, a couple of wins here against the Royals and last night against the Giants. You got the Blues in the playoffs, a 1-1 game, a 1-1 series going into tonight's game three. You look over at the Royals. Yeah, maybe they haven't had the best of seasons to start things off, but they've got some electric talent. We got a chance to see Bobby Witt Jr. in a couple games, hit his first home run against Dakota Hudson. So they got that going on. You've got NBA playoffs going on. You got the Memphis Grizzlies. They're getting ready to start game three tomorrow night against the Golden State Warriors. That series is tied at one. You got the local kid, Jason Tatum. Is Boston is playing Milwaukee. That series tied 1-1. So a lot of good things. Oh, yeah, and there's soccer going on. St. Louis City SC is gearing up for their first season starting next year. Seats are going in at the stadium. It's looking incredible down there. So once again, just so much positive to talk about here in the Midwest when it comes to sports.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Like you said, even though the Royals are struggling, they do have these young players coming up that they can look forward to. Like you said, Bobby Witt Jr. hit the home run the other night. They've got another couple of kids getting ready to come up and some young pitching. So things are looking brighter on the western side of the state. In the near future, they've got things to look forward to, even though it's kind of gloomy there right now.
Yeah, and only 93% humidity. Yeah, just 93% humidity. That's what we get to look forward to in the Midwest. All right, let's talk about the Cardinals real quick. They are the later of the two games tonight. It's a 9-10 start out there in San Francisco. But we'll start there as we kind of want to lead you into the Blues pregame starting here at about 8 o'clock. Like I said last night, a 7-1 victory over the Giants. Miles Michaelis looked very, very good. 5 2/3, just gives up the single earned run, dropped his ERA to 1.53, which is incredible for him. I mean, we weren't sure what we were going to get out of Miles Michaelis this year, and he's come out pitching very, very well. Maybe not deep into games a lot, but he has done well in the innings that he's pitched in. Bullpen looks really, really good. They've been phenomenal outside of TJ McFarland. Phenomenal for at least the last week or so. You can't say enough about what Cody Whitley has done coming out of the bullpen as well. And then you had Tommy Edman. 3 runs batted in last night. He has been hitting like crazy as of late. And then Yadier Molina tying Ted Simmons for 9th all-time in Cardinals history with the home run. It was just an overall all-around good game. And coming off the 10-0 victory against the Royals, it really made you feel like this offense was starting to roll a little bit. We were talking about this pre-show about how it just feels like they're about ready to start connecting and clicking. And I think we're going to see that as the weekend goes on here in San Francisco.
Yeah, I would hope so. We had 2 weeks where the offense has really kind of sputtered, and it's been one game on and then a couple games off, and then they score 8 or 9, and then you have 2 or 3 games where they might score a run a game. But like you said, it seems like guys are starting to get into a groove. I told you before the show started, Tyler O'Neill looks like he's starting to get locked in. And it's funny, you talk about Tyler O'Neill struggling, and he's like fifth in the league in RBIs with 19 now. You know, he's right there. So, but he's definitely looked like he's locked in the last couple of days. His swing looks shorter. He looks ready to go. Yachty's finally started to lock in. You know, it was a weird spring training for Yachty. You know, it was a short spring training anyway, and then he didn't get back into the States right away. He had some personal issues. And so then he had a couple of nagging injuries. So Yachty's just now working his way back into shape, but he's starting to look like Yachty again at the plate, starting to hit everything hard, taking good swings. The home run he hit last night was just effortless. I mean, he barely swung at that ball and hit it down the left field line and, you know, hit it 370 feet. So, you know, that's a good sign. And then Dylan Carlson as well is starting to show signs of life. He just missed a home run with a double last night off the left center field wall, had a couple other hits. So if you can get those three guys going, I think we feel really good. And then we were talking about this before we came on. He looks good at the plate. I know he's not making contact. People are going to say, oh, you're crazy. But his at-bats don't look bad. You know, you can see that he's trying to hit the ball to the opposite field. He's not trying to just crush everything over the wall. He's actually taking good swings, taking good at-bats. There's something in his swing. There's some kind of little hitch somewhere that he's got to figure out that's just not allowing him to get to the ball, because it's not like he's swinging at pitches in the dirt or not seeing balls. He's right there. He's just not getting to the ball. So there's some little mechanical flaw in his swing that's just not letting him get to the ball. And if he gets fixed, I think you're going to see the Paul DeJong that you had in spring training that everybody was excited about. So I'm not ready quite yet to just panic on the Paul DeJong thing. I know everybody wants Nolan Gorman up here. I'd love to see Nolan Gorman as well. I'm not going to lie to you. I'd love to see that. But I don't think it's going to happen for a couple more weeks at least. I think they're going to give Paulie a chance. And then there's the question, you and I were talking about this beforehand. You know, how do you make that happen with Gorman? And I know a lot of people are like, oh, you put Tommy Edman at shortstop. Well, yeah, Tommy Edman's a great second baseman. But from everything I've heard, the Cardinals aren't convinced that Tommy Edman can play shortstop. You know, he played shortstop a little bit in the minor leagues. But the Cardinals don't feel like he's got the range or the arm to make the throws from deep in the hole and do some of the little things that you have to do defensively as a shortstop. And, you know, I know you and I were talking about this earlier, Wags, and you said, well, David Eckstein was like that. Yeah, Eckstein did struggle a little bit. You know, people said, oh, he's not big enough. He doesn't have a strong enough arm. He can't do it. And he found ways to get it done. And, you know, I haven't seen Tommy Edman play shortstop. You know, he did do it in the minor leagues for a while. The Cardinals got to look at him. And for whatever reason, there's something there that they don't believe that he can be a solid major league shortstop. If they did, we'd see it every once in a while. You know, even like last year, the year before when DeJong struggled, they never really put Edman at shortstop to try to fill that void. You know, they brought up Sosa or they moved other guys around. Tommy was never the guy they put over there to try to fix that. So that kind of tells you right there that they don't have a whole lot of belief that that's the strongest position for Tommy Edman. So, you know, that kind of makes – that's a big question then is, what do you do with Gorman? You know, because they don't really want him to just be a DH. They want him to play second base when he's up here. So, you know, how do you make that work?
Yeah, that's a great question. And to the point about Eckstein, I mean, Eckstein came up, he played shortstop throughout. He didn't get moved around. He stuck to the shortstop position, was able to work through his mechanics and succeed at that. Whereas Edman hasn't had that ability to stick at the shortstop position, find out, you know, maybe what his throwing angle is or how to use his body to get the ball over there or what have you. So that makes more sense as to why a guy like Edman hasn't been shifted over there, because Eckstein essentially did it the entire time. So he found a way to make it work for him. So Matt over on YouTube's like, I love Paulie D, but he also liked to let Miss Diaz too. And Diaz was a guy that was very flashy at the defensive position. He played a great shortstop. Paul DeJong has played a great shortstop this year. Two errors so far this year, but he's looked really good in the field. And that's where I think the question lies a lot of times is, you know, how much defense do you need to have in order to save yourself and give you the time to maybe find that swing again before a team moves on? Where, you know, we looked at DeJong. You talked about he had struggles last year. Well, he had struggles in 2020 as well. There's never been outside of his, like, the first half of his first year where he's had a very consistent set of time at the plate. So I think this is where the frustration is building, is you've given him a ton of chances. And he has glimpses here and there, but the struggles far outweigh the longevity of his success. And yet we've seen this team essentially bail on other players that have had a short run of success, a lot of struggles, have played very good defense as well, and yet they move on from them very, very quickly. And that's, I think that's where the disconnect is why has DeJong been a guy that has had the leash lengthened a little bit, whereas others maybe did not have that?
Well, you got to look at the fact, too, the way you talk about that. Aled Mestias did have that rookie year where he was really, really good, and he hit the 25 home runs, and he played really good shortstop. The next year, he struggled playing defense, and he wasn't hitting. You know, we talk about Paulie's struggles, and you look at last year, and you say, oh, he hit 220. Even during doing all of that, he still had 90. You got to remember, he had a broken wrist at one point during the season last year. He still had 19 home runs and drove home 60, having a down year. You know, 2019, he had 30 home runs and 70 RBIs. 20, he had a broken wrist. So he's had a broken wrist twice. You know, he's gotten hit by pitches, had his wrist broken twice. And he had COVID in that time period. So it's not like there haven't been injuries and then COVID in there too that you have to look at. You know, I'm not saying, oh, you know, Paul DeJong's amazing, he's got to play every day. But I do think that he still can be that guy. And on this team, if you can figure out how to get Paul DeJong going, you know, if he hits seventh or eighth in this lineup and hits 240 and gives you 20 or 25 home runs and can give you 70 RBIs, that's, and plays the shortstop that he's played this year, that's perfectly fine. You know, I know everybody wants, you know, I know he's only hitting 120 right now, but, you know, you don't have a whole lot of solutions. Edmundo Sosa has looked awful at the plate this year. His strikeout rate's almost 60%. You know, hasn't driven home a run, and he's made a couple of errors at shortstop, hasn't looked real good defensively. And so if you're not willing, if you don't have Sosa to fall back on and you're not willing to move Edmund, then you're kind of stuck with DeJong. And I'm just going to throw this out there because I know everybody was so upset that they didn't get Trevor Story. Trevor Story is being booed out of Boston right now. Red Sox fans are wanting him traded already. And Trevor Story is hitting, last time I looked, he was hitting 205. He hasn't hit a home run yet. And he's only got 7 RBIs. So we're talking no home runs and 3 RBIs more than DeJong. And he's making, what, $25 million more than Paulie is? Something like that. So, I mean, things could be worse.
They very well could be. And then really just one last, you know, point on Gorman and DeJong, essentially. Does Gorman deserve it? And I think that's another piece that you have to look at as well. I mean, does he deserve to get the call up and have an opportunity to showcase what he's doing up here? Obviously, Juan Yepes has gotten his chance. That's been a little bit different because I believe he was already on the 40-man roster. So you have to move Gorman to the 40-man roster in order to bring him up as well. So, but we're seeing that he's doing it. I mean, right now he's hitting 302, 11 home runs, 17 RBIs. He does have 34 strikeouts, which I think that's what we knew we were going to get out of a guy like Gorman. He was going to be a boom or bust, but he seems to be booming a lot this year. He did that last year as well. So that's that run of success. Does he deserve that chance to come up here? And if he does, how and or why are the Cardinals, or how did the Cardinals bring him up, and why are they not bringing him up right now?
You know, I think he deserves it. You know, I mean, he just got named the Atlantic League Player of the Month for April. You know, he proved that he could hit in AA and AAA a little bit last year. He's proven it again this year. He's still really young. We got to remember that Nolan Gorman just turned 21. So it's not like he's a seasoned kid out there. You know, so you don't want to rush him. Like you said, 34 strikeouts already. You know those strikeouts are going to jump when he comes up here. And the home runs are not going to come immediately. He's not going to come up to the major leagues and hit 11 home runs right off the bat. He's probably going to come up here and struggle. Remember how what Dylan Carlson looked like in that first month when he got up here. And, you know, we've seen Dylan struggle and have times where he's really good and times where he's not, you know, and, you know, we forget that Dylan's only 22, turning 23. So these are young kids. Nolan definitely deserves the shot. I think he's going to get up here at some point, but I think the Cardinals, like we've talked about, they don't really have a clear path to bring him up here right now because of the fact that you don't know what you want to do with Edmund. You got to figure that situation out. So I think they kind of want to slow play this a little bit. You know, see if he can cut down his strikeouts a little bit, keep hitting home runs, keep hitting for power. And I think if he does that, and if, as much as they don't want to move Tommy Edman, I think if in the next 2 or 3 weeks, Paulie DeJong doesn't start doing something, they're going to be forced to make a move. And so that's going to be, I think that's going to be Nolan's time frame. It's probably more towards the end of May. You get closer to Memorial Day, first part of June. If he's still crushing in AAA and Paulie's struggling, then I think it's really going to kind of force the Cardinals to make a move down there.
I think you're right. It's there's only so long you can go before you have to make that change. And I know that the Cardinals are looking at it, and you mentioned a guy like Trevor Story, obviously, Carlos Correa, Javi Baez, all these shortstops got massive deals in the offseason, and no, none of them are really putting up ridiculous numbers right now. So you look back and you go, okay, with the way that this Cardinals season has gone so far, they haven't won more than two games in a row. They are, you know, win two, lose one, win two, lose one. They had a three-game losing streak when the Mets were in town. So they've been very, very consistently inconsistent. But with where they're sitting at right now, and yes, the struggles of Paul DeJong are there, but the other guys, including Arenado and Edmund, are hitting right now. Are the Cardinals sitting back and going, okay, you know what? We decided consciously not to chase a big number and a star name. We're near the top of our division right now. They're battling the Brewers, which I think everybody expected that to be the case. Yeah, your shortstop is struggling, but we're seeing the production down at the minor league level with guys like a Gorman and then Yepez as well. So are they okay and going, yeah, we made the right decision with what we're doing. And is that going to hold true the rest of the year if DeJong does not hit and they do shift Edmund to short? He's not as good as DeJong in the field, and Gorman's still there, but maybe not as great as he. I mean, is there a break even where they go, yeah, this is still the right choice that we made, and we're happy we did it?
Yeah, I think so, because again, like you said, none of those big free agent shortstops have really shown that they're able to do anything to this point. They're all kind of struggled, and so, you know, I don't think there's going to be a point where the Cardinals go, man, we should have made that move for a shortstop. I think they're going to feel okay. I think they're going to, like you said, I think if Paulie keeps struggling, you'll see an Edmund move over there. You may see Sosa play some shortstop if he can figure stuff out. But I think they're going to say, you know, we made the right decision because you have those options. You have Nolan Gorman coming. You've got Jordan Walker coming. You have all these guys. You know, and where are you going to play all of these guys? I mean, I know you want a shortstop up here right now that's producing, but – you know, you've also got to look at the roster and go, okay, what's the easiest way to construct this roster and make it work and make all of these guys fill in and make things run properly?
Yeah, you really do. And thankfully, the Cardinals have seen success at the minor league level, really at all three levels right now. You've got Gorman, you've got Jordan Walker, Mason Wynn has been producing as well. So you're seeing success at the lower levels, which gives you hope that, you know, if the guys at the major league level do struggle and these guys continue to move up the ranks and produce as well as they are right now, that you will have some stopgap measures here in the next, you know, couple months if need be. Also trade pieces as well. I mean, that's the other part. You know, you talk about guys being blocked and all of that. Some of these guys may be playing their way onto another team, and that may be a way to help the Cardinals as well. You know, if you're not confident in Tommy Edman playing at shortstop, maybe it's using a guy that's producing in the minors to go out and get a shortstop. Maybe that involves Tommy Edman in a trade as well, which I don't think that's the case. I really don't think they're going to move on from Tommy Edman. But if you're not going to play him at shortstop and you have to find a way to get Gorman up here, that might be a case that they had to think about as well. But that's what you're looking at is, you know, it's not just about how you're helping the team on the field. It's going to be about how you're going to help this team on the field later in the season with a guy that could potentially be traded here as well. So that's another piece that you have to look at as well. Well, let's talk a little bit about Yepez real quick. Came up a couple days ago for Sosa because he was put on the COVID IL, tested positive for that. And we'll talk about another guy that tested positive today. But he came up with a bang. I mean, two doubles in his first two at-bats in the exact same spot. But here's the key, against two different handed pitchers. One was against the lefty, one was against the righty. So that's a big piece as well. But two doubles to lead things off. He got his first RBI last night against the Giants. He's hitting .571 already. It's two games. Come on, don't beat me up for that one. But what have you seen out of Yepez so far that has excited you and made you go, okay, yeah, this is the guy we expected in spring training who didn't grab the situation he needed to, but could do it now?
He doesn't look overwhelmed. He looks totally ready and prepared for this situation this time. He's definitely been right on the ball. He's taking really good swings. He looks prepared. He looks like he's got a plan up there, and he doesn't look overmatched. So I'm excited to see what he does. You know, we talked about this before the show too. I think he needs to be your DH right now against righties. Unless Albert's out there against the lefty, I think Yepez has to be your guy pretty much. You know, because Corey Dickerson hasn't done a whole lot to really solidify that spot. So I think Yepez is kind of going to be that right-handed bat against righties anyway. And then Albert takes the lefties. But, you know, the kid, everything we've heard about the kid from everybody that's watched him in the minor leagues, he's a professional hitter. You know, he had 11 home runs already in the minors this year. He hit 27 home runs last year. He's a big kid. You know, he's not a little tiny guy. He's a big, big kid. And so, you know, I think he could be – I think he could really help this lineup right now. You know, they need a little spark, and he seemed to provide that. And, you know, he's not good defensively. I mean, he's one of those guys. And I say that, you know, that's been the knock on him on every level is that, you know, where do you play him unless he's a DH, because he really – the glove is not his strongest tool on a baseball field. So, you know, I think he's a DH, you know, a permanent DH. And so, you know, is that something the Cardinals really want to do? Or would that make him a guy that the Cardinals may move at the trade deadline if he does well, if they decide, okay, we don't want just a DH on this team. We want a guy that can play multiple positions, do multiple things. Then maybe Yepez ends up being a guy if you get to the deadline and you need to go get a starter or something, maybe he becomes the piece that you move to solidify that, whatever you're missing on this ball club.
Yeah, it's going to be a really fun trip for sure to get to the trade deadline and from there on out, because this team is going to be competitive for the entire season. There's no question in my mind. And I haven't been as high on the Cardinals the last couple of years as I could have been, especially being a lifelong fan. There have been a lot of question marks, and this season, not so much. I mean, there still are question marks there. Obviously, I'm still not super happy with what the rotation could be, although they've done well so far this year. We talked about Mikolas, how he's pitched. Dakota Hudson has really kind of rebounded. Steven Matz, I think he's a guy that really gets lost in the shuffle, essentially. I mean, he had the opening, or not the opening day start, but the opening series start here in St. Louis. And, you know, first two innings, great. And then he kind of blew up a little bit, but, you know, it was kind of a blister situation. He's looked really, really good since. I think he's a guy, I mean, I'll be honest, I think when we were talking about early season predictions, Steven Matz is a guy I think we both left out of our starting rotation because we completely forgot the Cardinals went after him. So you've got that. Wainwright obviously has pitched okay. He had a great game against Kansas City the other day. Had a couple of not so great games before that. He's now, as we talked about, Sosa being on the COVID IL. He is now on the IL with COVID. Positive test today. No symptoms. He says he's fine. Hopefully he'll get a couple of negative results before his next start, which I believe is going to be on Tuesday. So there's that as well. You got Libertor down there. He's pitching decently in AAA as well. I think, and this is probably just me, I think I'm probably making a mountain out of a molehill when it comes to what I think about this rotation, but there's still a little bit of anxiety for me about this rotation lasting the full season. Am I crazy, or are there some pieces to that could be true?
No, I mean, you always got to have some questions. You know, with the injury history that Miles has had the last couple of years, you hold your breath every time he goes out there just because you never know when something could pop up again. Steven Matz has had a history of being injured. He was healthy last year, but he has a long track record of injuries. You know, you had Dakota bouncing back. You weren't sure what you were going to get, but he's looked really good. I think the thing that has to make you feel pretty good is when you look down at the minor leagues this year, when you look at Memphis, Libertor, Thompson, and Oviedo are all three pitching pretty well. So that makes you feel pretty good about the fact that maybe all three of them are a step closer. And then the guy that's in this bullpen, and I don't really understand what the Cardinals are doing with him because they've used him really sparingly, is you've got a guy like Jake Woodford. And it seems like they have not wanted to hardly use him out of the bullpen this year, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, because he was really, really good down the stretch last year, you know, in the rotation. So you've got that piece too. So I feel pretty good about this rotation, honestly. The guy who I thought was really the key to it was Dakota Hudson. And I was nervous the first couple of starts because he didn't look really good, but he's really settled in and has looked like the old Dak the last three or four starts. So if you have a healthy Dakota Hudson, you're going to be in pretty good shape, I think. And then, you know, we haven't heard a whole lot of updates. The last thing I heard was that Jack Flaherty was throwing, you know, from 90 feet, felt good, looked good. Everybody was excited, and that they were maybe going to stick him on a mound next week sometime. and let him start throwing off a mound. And, you know, we're talking then, you know, of course, we're at the month now that everybody said, oh, he's only going to be out a month, which anybody that had any sense knew that that wasn't possible. You know, they're saying now he's probably going to need another month. Really? You just now figured that. Yeah, you just now figured that out, that, you know, he missed a month and he wasn't going to just bounce back and be ready to go. So, you know, hopefully you're going to get Jack back at sometime in June. And, you know, then, you know, if you have Flaherty and the rest of those guys are healthy with these young guys that we talked about, I think their rotation is going to be okay.
Yeah, and, you know, the one guy we also don't talk about is the guy that's getting the start tonight, and Jordan Hicks. He went 3 1/3 on Sunday, gave up a couple runs. That's the deepest he's gone is 3 1/3. Obviously, he's trying to ramp up to become a starter, you know, fully 5-6 innings right there. But he's I'm once again, the experiment with Hicks as a starter is intriguing to me because he does throw hard. He does have good command, though. And that's the thing that really kind of excited a lot of people was, you know, you saw him in the closer role and he came out there and not only was he throwing over 100 miles an hour, but he had a, you know, a really tight slider. He had movement. He could pinpoint his pitches on occasion, but he was also a little wild as well. I mean, what are your thoughts so far early on here with the Jordan Hicks experiment? Do you think it's going to last, or is this one of those things you're just going to try and play with your toy until it's broken again?
I don't really understand this. You know, we didn't hear anything about Jordan Hicks being in the rotation until like the week before the season started. And they're like, oh, Jordan Hicks is our fifth starter. We haven't stretched him out at all, but it's been the plan since last offseason for Hicks to be a starter. Really? Lie to me some more. That wasn't, you know, Verhagen, they realized, wasn't very good when he got to spring training after they went and signed him and said, oh, crap, we got to do something different here. You know, if Hicks was lengthened out and he could give you five or six innings, you know, I mean, definitely it's interesting because, you know, he's a guy who could give you 5 or 6 innings and strike out 10 or 11 guys every time he goes out there. But until you get him stretched out, those games are – you talk about the Cardinals winning one, losing one, winning two, losing one. Well, you go back and look, pretty much every game Jordan Hicks has started, they've lost because he's gone 3 innings and then you've had to use 7 pitchers. And when you have to do that, you know, 1 or 2 of those guys are not going to be very good on a day. It's just, you know, that's just how that works. When you use that many pitchers, somebody's going to have an off day. So those games scare me every time he starts because it's like, okay, you can't feel comfortable about it because you just don't know, you know, what that bullpen is going to look like when you're having to run through 5-6 pitchers in a game. So in the long play, Jordan Hicks as a starter, could that be intriguing? Could he be a dominant pitcher in this rotation next year? Yeah, maybe. You know, is he going to get there this year? I doubt it. I don't think you're going to get him. He's probably going to be a 5 or maybe 6 inning pitcher at the most by the end of the season this year, if he's even still in the rotation, because if Jack Flaherty comes back, then what do you do? So, it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out as well.
Well, and you're going to need your offense to produce as well. And thankfully on Sunday, they were able to do that multiple times. It was a late inning comeback. The 4 home runs solo given up to the Diamondbacks, you know, gave them that 5-3 lead. But that at bottom of the 7th with Bader and then eventually Arenado hitting home runs essentially saved that Hicks start. And the bullpen once again kind of shut things down after that. So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out going forward. A big start for him tonight against Alex Cobb and the Giants. One final thing from the Cardinals before we move over onto the Blues real quick. We're, 26, 27 games into the season so far. Who has been your biggest surprise to start the season?
Huh, that's an interesting question. I would say, you know what? I'm going to go with Ryan Helsley, honestly, because Ryan Helsley's looked like the guy that everybody talked about a couple of years ago. You know, he was the guy the year that Jordan Hicks made this team. What was that, 2018 now? Helsley was the guy that everybody talked about that was going to could throw 100 miles an hour and could eventually be your closer. And then Hicks kind of surpassed him, and Helsley's been kind of up and down and not been real consistent. Well, Ryan Helsley looks like a major league closer right now. He hit 103 the other day. You know, he's got control of all of his pitches. He's been absolutely dominant and almost unhittable. So I would put Ryan Helsley as probably my biggest surprise to this point.
See, for me, it's Tommy Edman. You know, I think we talked last year about, is he a guy that can lead off? Is he a guy that can be productive consistently? What are you going to get out of him this year? I mean, there were a lot of questions surrounding him. And yes, he won the Gold Glove last year and beat out Colton Wong, who was a perennial Gold Glove candidate here in St. Louis. So the defense we saw was there, but he's hitting 325 this year. He's got three home runs. He has 14 RBIs and six stolen bases. So he's kind of done everything for you this year. He's gotten on base. He's stolen bases, made, you know, run havoc on the base paths. He's driven in runs. I mean, he's doing a lot of things right now. And once again, still early in the season. Don't get me wrong. Things can change. But I think the mindset on Tommy Edman is starting to change a little bit about this guy could actually be a good force in this lineup and in a table setter, essentially. And it helps when you're hitting in front of, you know, Arenado, Goldschmidt, Albert Pujols in some cases, Tyler O'Neill when he gets hit, or hot, Dylan Carl. I mean, the guys behind him are definitely protecting him a little bit. But you also have protection on the flip side of it as well, especially with the DH there. I mean, when you have Harrison Bader hitting 8-9 in that area sometimes, you're going to see pitches to hit as far as Tommy Edman is concerned as well. So he's been doing everything that he needs to do this year to be a productive Major League Baseball player. And you just kind of hope that it continues because he's a very versatile player. And we had the questions about him when he went into the outfield and we're like, does this really, he's answered the questions right now. And I think if the Cardinals are going to be successful this year, he has to continue to answer those questions.
Can I throw a little wrench into your thought there? You're going to look at me weird when I say this. At the trade deadline, if the Cardinals trade somebody, I think it might be Tommy Edman. Because like you talked about a while ago, if they don't believe that he can play shortstop and Nolan Gorman is your second baseman in the future, what do you do with Tommy Edman? Because you've got three outfielders. You've got an infield that's already set with Goldie and Arenado. And then you've got Jordan Walker coming, who's going to play first base more than likely when Goldie becomes the DH at some point. You've got Yepez. You know, if Edman isn't your shortstop, can't play shortstop, can't make that transition, I'm not sure that Tommy Edman has a future on this ball club, honestly. And that will upset a lot of people. But if Nolan Gorman is the guy, then I don't know that there's room for both of them on this team if Edman can't transition to shortstop.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're 100% right, and that goes back to our conversation about shortstop. You know, who's going to be the guy that, you know, will be a centerpiece for a deal, and it might be a guy like Tommy Edman. And I think that really comes down to how the Cardinals view Gorman. I mean, it really does, and I think they're happy with him, but are they happy enough with him to put him at second base and, you know, trade a defensive stalwart such as Tommy Edman? I mean, if it came in your mind, let's say everything is status quo. Everybody that is supposed to be hitting is hitting. Paul DeJong's still struggling. They're in the market for a shortstop. And it comes down to a team says, okay, there's two trade offers on the table. One has got Tommy Edman in it, and you keep him at second base, Gold Glove caliber offense. He's hitting, you know, right around 300 doing what he's doing. Or you've got Nolan Gorman, who has struggled a bit at second base in AAA, has hit 30-something home runs, but he struck out 90 times. You know, just kind of basic numbers that we think of. Which one do you move? Do you move Tommy Edman, or do you move the upside in Gorman?
Knowing the Cardinals, they're going to move Edman. Because what's the one thing the Cardinals have talked about for the last 3 or 4 years that they hadn't developed that they don't have in their system? It's a young left-handed power hitter that can drive home runs and can be in the middle of that lineup to break up the righties. I know Edman's a switch hitter, but he's not got power. Gorman's that bat that they've been wanting for the last 3 or 4 years that they haven't been able to get, that left-handed power bat, you know, which from everything we heard, he's doing a pretty good job at second base. You know, he's really not struggling too much. He's still learning the position, but he's really adjusted well. You know, and he can run, he can steal bases. You know, he's not, you know, normal. I don't know how many people have actually seen Nolan Gorman. I mean, I know everybody hears him, but I don't know how many people have actually watched him. He's not really a big guy.
No,
you know, he's a slender guy. He can run. He's athletic. So I can see Gorman being that guy. Plus, he's younger. You're gonna have more years of control. Whereas Edman, you're gonna have to start paying him some money. So I can see the Cardinals making that move and betting on the upside and the power potential that Nolan Gorman has. You know, I mean, Gorman's a top 15 prospect in all of baseball. Tommy Edman's never been that. Nobody. Tommy Edman was just a guy who has proven people wrong, you know. So I think in that case, I think the Cardinals go with Gorman and the potential that he has.
I think you're probably right on the nose on that one. All right, that game coming up at about 9:10 tonight, Hicks versus Cobb. Cardinals looking to win the second game of their series with the Giants. It's a four-game set out in San Francisco. Another team that's looking to win a game, and this one's at home, is the St. Louis Blues. They are playing the Minnesota Wild in the first round of the Western Conference playoffs. They were able to take game one 4-0 and essentially steal home ice advantage away from the Wild, although the Wild did have a big 6-2 victory in game two, bouncing back from that shutout. It's just going to be a tough one for the Blues, though. They are dealing with a lot of defensive injuries. Obviously, Nick Leddy exited after game one, didn't play in game two. Marco Scandella's been out the last six. And then Robert Bortuzzo took a puck to the head in game two, and he will be out tonight as well. So Bortuzzo, Leddy both ruled out. Scandella, a game-time decision tonight. And this back end, this core of D has just taken a lot of the brunt of things right now. And it kind of shone through in game two against the Wild when Kaprizov and Eriksson Ek kind of ran wild in that game. A couple power play goals after failing to score on six power plays in game one. I look at it as this. The Blues have to get one of these defensemen back in order for them to win the series. And maybe it starts tonight with Marco Scandella getting into the lineup and really settling things down. Because if you don't have that, then you're going to have a Callie Rosen and a Steve Santini third defensive pairing. And that doesn't scare anybody. And with a team like the Wild, with the talent offensively that they have on their top two lines, very scary. The one positive, though, is the Blues do have the last change being at home. So they're not going to necessarily throw that defensive pairing out there in that matchup. But sometimes things happen and you got to be very, very careful. And before you know it, you know, a Kaprizov is going up against that third pairing. It can be very, very dangerous. But a very big, big game for the Blues tonight coming up here in about an hour here at Enterprise Center. I'm still not sure what to make of this series right now. I think we all thought it was going to go 6 or 7 for sure, but there are pieces that make me think the Blues can end this quick, and there's also pieces that make me think the Wild could end this quick. I don't know what you've seen in the first two games, though.
Yeah, I mean, they've been pretty even. When you break down the numbers, I mean, their shots on goal, their goals, pretty much, I mean, they're pretty much even up and down the board in all the key statistics. I mean, like you brought up, it worries me about the defense. Like you said, if they don't get at least one of those guys back, I think they're going to have a hard time winning this series. Yeah, I'm nervous. You know, I picked them to win. I thought the Blues would win in 7. I thought it would go 7 games. I think I picked every series to go 7-19 when they won the Cup, too. So
almost did.
Yeah, pretty much. So I think that's where I'm going with this. But I am nervous. I think they need to win tonight. I think you need to come out first game at home in the playoffs. You need to set the tone early. They need to score early and then, you know, let the crowd kind of carry them through this one, at least get this first game at home. And then, and then take your chances on Sunday, because you definitely don't want to go into that Sunday game down 2-1 and, you know, be kind of feeling bad about yourselves after that first game of the series when you were really feeling good and things looked great. So I think you got to come out, jump on them early, get the lead, win tonight. And then, you know, like I said, take your chances going into Sunday and know that at least it's probably going to go 6 games at that point. And we'll see what happens. But hopefully, like you said, hopefully the Blues defense can get some of these guys back in the next game or two and play better. And hopefully, we can get good goalie play as well. And we'll see what happens. What do you think? Are we going to see Bennington at all in this series, you think?
If they lose tonight, I think it's a very real possibility you see him on Sunday. I mean, Husso was phenomenal in game one. He was making saves he had no business making. He had, you know, basically shades of Bennington from 2019, just doing what he was doing. Game two, I think a couple of those goals, he kind of left out to dry, and really he couldn't do anything about them. I don't think he played poorly in game two, but when you give up, what was it, four goals on 9 shots, that was the Ville Husso of last year at the beginning of the season, where he would give up a goal on the first shot of almost every game. And I think he gave up a goal on the first 2 shots of that game in game two. So to have that kind of Husso pop back up is a little scary. But he has shown a propensity, just like Bennington did in 2019, to bounce back from a loss and play well the next game. So I'm definitely willing to give him an opportunity. And people forget, and I say this, I've said this a lot this year, that You gotta remember, and goaltending is very tricky, and it fluctuates year to year. It's very, very fluid. But in 2019, Ville Husso was ahead of Bennington on the depth chart. He was the next guy up after Allen and after Hutchinson at that point. But he dealt with some injuries that year, and it eventually fell to Jordan Bennington to come up and be the guy. So Husso has always been viewed as a guy that has the talent, has the goods, has the ability to play up here. And yes, a lot of people were questioning him last year, like, is he really the guy? But I think this year he has shown that he can handle things when he needs to. Do I think he's a 1A goalie? No, I don't think he is a 1A goalie, but I think he definitely plays well in a tandem. And I think what we've seen with the Blues over the last 8, 9, 10 years is they are much better when they have two goalies just going after each other versus having one guy that's taking things over. And I think with Binnington and Husso, I think you can get to that point. I don't think it's been as prevalent as it was with Jake Allen when it was him and Carter Hutton or him and Brian Elliott or even before that, Elliott and Halak. I think all those pairings, they really played off of each other very, very well as far as the competition level. And I don't think that's not the case with Binnington and Husso. I just don't feel like they've had that ability to explore that competition just yet. And I think that's partially because of the environment we're living in with the COVID things and all that kind of stuff. It's just been a different environment. But I think going into next year, it could be that play where they have a really good competition and play off of each other. But at this point right now, it's Husso's Nets. If they come out and lose today in spectacular fashion, which we've seen that happen in a big first game of the playoffs, especially, you know, back in 2019, that first Stanley Cup game against Boston here in St. Louis was bad. And the opportunity to clinch it at home was bad. If he doesn't play well tonight, I think the questions really start to pile in. You have to think about it at least. I don't know if it's an actual thing that will happen. But it's definitely going to make the question marks pop up even more. But we're seeing that in Minnesota too. I mean, everybody was questioning if Marc-Andre Fleury was going to start game two because of the way he played. Blues had success against Cam Talbot as well. So it's not like they're unsuccessful. And I told this to my boss the other day. I go, look, if they get this defenseman back tonight, if Scandella does come back tonight, I would not be shocked if the Blues went out in this series. I think Minnesota threw their haymaker in game two. I think they were embarrassed on home ice in game one. I think they were pissed off that they didn't score a power play goal in six opportunities. And I think they threw everything they had in that game two win. And even though it was 6-2, I don't know if the score indicated how close that game was. And because of that, the Blues get the Scandella back tonight and they win. I think it might break the spirit of the Minnesota Wild tonight. And that could be it.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see, you know, if they could come out and play that game, really kind of blow them out like they did in game one. You know, you're right. It could really change the course of how the rest of the series plays out. I know we're talking playoffs and stuff, but you said something a minute ago that I want to jump back to. You talked about Binnington and Husso and them having that cohesiveness playing together, sharing time and goal. And you said maybe next year they'll have that. Are they going to be together next year? Are the Blues going to be able to spend the money to bring Billy Husso back?
I mean, obviously they're going to be some money on coming off the books next year, and it's a very, very high potential. Realistically, I don't think it's going to happen. I think you are going to have a team that's just going to absolutely throw a ton of money at a guy like Husso after the season he's had this year. But once again, this was the first season that he really kind of took hold of a number one spot. So there's going to be a team that's going to take a chance. I mean, you see Toronto always is searching for a goaltender, but there are other teams that will do that. And speaking of Toronto, they're up 2-0 against the Lightning tonight. So if Toronto wins this series, I mean, I think it solidifies that Jack Campbell is their guy going forward, but there will be a team that throws a lot of money his way. But it's very possible that he sits there and goes, hey, look, I like what I got here. Maybe I take a little less to stick around here and play with Binnington. I know I'm going to get some playing time. Maybe they play off of each other really well. They like the grouping, and they know what they can do here in St. Louis. It's possible. I'd say it's probably 30-70 that he sticks around. I think it's 30-70 that he's here next year. Obviously, you can't pay $9, $10 million for two goaltenders and let things kind of start slipping through the cracks. They do have a lot of money tied up in a couple of different spots, but it's not out of the realm of possibility that he's here with us next year. You look at who's down there in the minors. Obviously, you got a guy like Joel Hofer down there. You've got a guy like Colton Ellis down there, guys that are eventually going to get up here. Obviously, Hofer had a cup of coffee up here as well. So they have guys that'll come up and fill that void. So I don't think it's a do-or-die situation to bring back a guy like Billy Husso. But I also think maybe they sit there and they explore a potential Jordan Binnington deal, although he does have the no-trade clause, so he can veto a deal if he really feels like he needs to. But maybe he does sit there and go, look, outplayed by Huso this year. If an opportunity comes along for me to be a starter somewhere, maybe I will waive it. And that might be the case where Ville Husso comes back as well. So very fluid situation. And I really think it comes down to how this series plays out. If the Blues don't advance out of the first round, I think you really sit back and look and go, man, what do we do when it comes to the goaltending situation? But if they move on and progress, it kind of blows the door wide open as to how they play things going forward.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, that would be if Husso would struggle the rest of this series and they would get knocked out in the first series, like you said, then they really do have a dilemma on their hands, because then they go, okay, are either one of these guys really that 1A type goalie, you know? So yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out, along with so many other things as we go through this series. And, you know, we've talked Cardinals and we've talked hockey. We haven't had a chance to talk football recently, man. I want to jump into, as we're moving close to the end of the show, we haven't had a chance to discuss the draft or any of the moves that have happened in the NFL in the last couple of weeks. So I just want to jump into that and get some of your thoughts on some of the craziness that has happened in the NFL in the offseason since the last time we talked.
Yeah, it's been absolutely crazy. I mean, the draft was very defensively heavy, which, I mean, I don't even recall the last time that it was so heavily defensive-oriented. I cannot remember. I mean, do you know the last time that defense really dominated an NFL draft?
It's been a while. And probably the mid-90s. You know, probably those years that – the years that Warren Sapp and Ray Lewis and some of those guys went out, mid-90s, you know, when you had Ed Reed, Ray Lewis, Warren Sapp, all in the same draft. So, you know, something along those lines where they all went early in the first round. But, yeah, it's definitely been different. And then, you know, never ever in the offseason of the NFL have we seen the amount of trades that we saw this year. And then big ones that you didn't see coming. I mean, did you see A.J. Brown go into Philadelphia, or Hollywood Brown go into Arizona, or it's like, what is going on around here, man?
It was absolutely crazy. And they were talking about this on 101 ESPN, I think the day after round one. It may have been after round two, but it's really interesting to sit there and see that the wide receiver position has now become what the running back position became a few years ago, where you've got a lot of talent there and you're able to move on from very talented wide receivers and not pay them. I mean, we saw the Tyreek Hill deal as well. We thought that was crazy. And then all of a sudden AJ Brown gets moved, and then Hollywood Brown gets moved. But, you know, you see a lot of these teams that are like, okay, we can grab a home run wide receiver in the first couple of rounds. It's going to make an impact on our team. And then we don't have to pay this guy $20, $25 million a year to play here. We'll send him to a team that really needs to pay $20 million a year to a guy so that they can get back into things. So that was the really big moment for me, was you're seeing these big names that have made impacts on their teams, that their big deals are coming up and their team goes, we can replace you in the draft. And they can, because these guys have been really, really good coming out of college. And then they ship them off to a Miami or to a Philadelphia, a team that's kind of rebuilding and needs to spend a little bit, maybe more money than they need to on a receiver to be relevant again. And that was the thing that really struck me, is that the wide receiver has now become the running back from about 10 years ago, where you just see them constantly being recycled every few years when their rookie deals are up.
Yeah, I understand that. I mean, can you imagine being a guy like Ryan Tannehill in Tennessee going, okay, wait a minute. In the last two seasons, I lost Corey Davis, I lost Julio Jones, I lost A.J. Brown, and I have who to throw to?
And he doesn't want to mentor the backup, the new guy coming in either.
Hey, if the guy learns from him, he learns from him. It's fine. It's not his job to mentor. You know, I mean, he got a lot of flack from that, but it's not like he's the only quarterback saying that. I mean, most of them do that, you know. I mean, we definitely have seen that from Aaron Rodgers. I mean, Brett Favre obviously did that to Aaron Rodgers, but we've seen it to a lot of quarterbacks say, you know, it's not my job to be the mentor to the guy who's going to replace me eventually. I mean, you'd love to hear him say, oh yeah, I'll take him under my wing and teach him everything. But you know that you're like, wait a minute, I'm supposed to teach the guy who's eventually going to take my job how to do it. So, I mean, I understand this feeling, but you've got to be a little bit more philosophical when you have that conversation with the media. You know, you got to word that a little bit better to not make yourself look so bad. And then, of course, there was a response from Kurt Warner of, you know, hey, give me a call, I'll mentor you all you want. So, you know, that's really interesting. And then, you know, we talked about the wide receivers that got moved, the A.J. Browns, the Hollywood Browns, and then the wide receiver that's been begging to be moved, Deebo Samuel's still standing there going, hey, what about me? I don't want to be here. Where do I go? Pick me.
I mean, you have to look at his injury history. I mean, he hasn't really been able to stay completely healthy the last couple of years. Yes, he's been an absolutely dominant receiver when he's been in the games, but injuries, and I think we've seen that with all the receivers, so they've all dealt with injuries at some point, but it is interesting that he wasn't moved during the draft because he's adamantly said he wants out, but it's really interesting to see who would he go to at this point, because I think the teams that needed wide receivers made the moves that they needed to. There is one team that always is lurking in the shadows, and it would not surprise me if they found a way to make a really, really good deal and not give up a whole lot and bring him in. I keep looking over in New England at Bill Belichick and just sitting there going, he's working on something to bring a guy like Samuel in there, because you look at the Patriots and they've never outside of Randy Moss for the 1 year, they've never really had an outstanding number one receiving threat that wasn't a tight end. So it would not shock me if they found a way to make something work to bring Samuel in there and give Mac Jones somebody to throw to that is a really good home run threat. And honestly, I think that could shake up the AFC East even more. I think Buffalo obviously is still up there at the top as the number one team up there, but New England gave them a big push last year, which I think surprised a lot of people. And if you're able to add a guy like Deebo Samuel to that offense, watch out. That's a two-horse race that's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, well, another team in the East that's interested that has been trying to get a wide receiver all offseason is the Jets. And people laugh when I say that, but when you see what the Jets did during the draft, you know, and apparently Zach Wilson's impressing people in training camp, you know, the Jets could be a team that surprised people in the AFC East. They've made some moves to improve and get better. They're going to be really interesting. Another team I'm excited to watch because I really like what they did in the draft is Detroit. I think the Lions made some moves to really solidify that team. I think they're going to be really interesting to watch in that North Division because I'm not sure how the Packer thing is going to work. You know, when Aaron Rodgers got a couple of rookie wide receivers that he's got to try to teach, and we know that Aaron's not been afraid to criticize his wide receivers when they've struggled. And, you know, rookie wide receiver, you know, that's probably the biggest learning curve. Other than quarterback, your rookie year is wide receiver, trying to learn the playbook, you know, trying to learn all the routes and all the blocking schemes and everything else. They seem to be the ones that struggle more than anybody been a quarterback their rookie year a lot of times. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And then, you know, there's still some big guys out there that haven't signed. I mean, you've got wide receivers like a Julio Jones, like a Jarvis Landry still sitting out there that are going to go somewhere, and they're going to impact whatever teams they go to. I mean, those are still guys that can be huge impact players. And then I don't know if you saw this, but Dez Bryant's begging for a tryout in Arizona. He wants to go play with Kyler and those guys, which, you know, why anybody would even want that headache, I have no idea.
That's because Hopkins is out. So.
Yeah, Hopkins is out. Let's go get Dez. That's a good idea. You know, and then you still got two quarterbacks sitting out there that could go somewhere and can still be impactful. Do the 49ers trade Jimmy G, or do they hold on to him? And, you know, we all know what a soap opera it is in Cleveland. But are the Browns really trying to trade Baker? Because I almost wonder, and I saw this again the other day, are they just really trying to push his trade value down because they know they need to keep him because Deshaun's going to be suspended longer than anybody really thinks?
I mean, it's a great question. And you look at it, and if you're Baker, why would you even go out there and play for them if they made the move for Deshaun and they knew full well that he was going to be suspended? And I mean, unless there were conversations that were like, hey, we're making this move, but you got one more year and this is going to up your value and we're going to try and get the most for you and give you the best opportunity to go to a franchise that you can help as well. I don't think that conversation took place, but I mean, if you're Baker, outside of really trying to raise your trade value, why would you play for the Browns this year? I mean, and if you do raise your trade value, who are you going to get traded to? You're looking at Seattle. I mean, if you're Baker Mayfield, do you want to go up and play in Seattle? Yeah, you got a couple of good receivers up there, but it's Seattle. I don't think that fits his style of play. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, played down in Oklahoma. He's not used to the Northwest weather and everything that goes along with it. So, I mean, do you want to raise your trade value and go to get traded to a Seattle, or do you try and find a way to force yourself to get released so you have your pick of where you get to go?
See, that's the thing, though. If you're Baker, if you just get released, you know, with all the PR hits that you've taken, is anybody going to sign you? I mean, he almost needs a chance to play and prove that he could come out, put it all behind him, play and be a leader, you know, to play for a contract and play for a career. Because, you know, Cleveland definitely, I mean, he got screwed by the Browns in so many different ways, you know, from the fact that, you know, if he was the, and he obviously was, he was hurt. There's no question about that. And he was willing to go out there and fight and still try to lead this team. And they let him go out there and play compromised. And they never really backed him up and said, you know, you got to give Baker credit because he's out here fighting and doing whatever he can to try to help this team. They kind of, you know, were just like, oh, yeah, you know, he's not very good this year. I don't know. Well, we're just going to keep throwing him out there. You know, so he got a bad, he got a raw deal from the Browns. And then with the whole thing with Deshaun, you know, he's going, he's not going, he's, you know, it's just been a huge mess and should have been handled so much better. But Baker's really, he needs something positive PR-wise, you know, to make him valuable to other teams. Because right now, with everything that's happened in Cleveland, well, you saw it in Carolina, guys in the clubhouse are saying, we don't want him here because all we've seen is negative publicity coming out of there. So we don't want that here. So Baker's got to really rebuild his reputation as much as anything else besides the play on the field to really get another contract.
Yeah, it's a really, really tricky situation, and one we're going to definitely be following as the offseason progresses and we get into mini camps and things like that. So definitely a wild time in the NFL. Before we get out of here, just a couple of quick hitters. Bruins up 3-1 on the Hurricanes after two. They're looking to get in that series. They are trailing two games to none in that series. Maple Leafs up 3-0 against Tampa in Tampa. This is a very, very tight series. One, if you're wanting offense, definitely watch that one. You got the Oilers and Kings coming up a little bit later tonight as well. Over in the NBA, Sixers are up by 2 on the Heat as they try to get back into that series. The Heat lead 2-0. Joel Embiid back tonight. He was cleared, went through protocols and cleared. He had a facial fracture, concussion in game 6 against the Raptors. So he is back tonight. Kyle Lowry also returned for the Heat in that game. Later tonight, you got Phoenix and Dallas. Luka Doncic out again tonight, looking like he might be able to play in game 4. But at that point, it might be a little bit too little too late because the Suns lead 2-0, could go up 3 tonight. Both Devin Booker and Chris Paul averaging over 22 points per game here in the playoffs. So they're looking like, oh, let's see what they look like in the regular season. The best team in the league. So that's one to watch out for. And then tomorrow night, you've got a couple series that are tied at 1 that has some St. Louis and Midwest connections. Obviously, Jason Tatum in Boston with the Celtics. That series is tied at 1 with the Bucks. Tatum, 28 points per game, seven assists, 2 steals, 4.5 rebounds so far in the playoffs. Both teams have had blowout wins in this series. 101-89 for the Bucks, 109-86 for the Celtics. So this one is a very, very fun series to watch, one we need to keep our eye on as well with the St. Louis connections. And then we talked a little bit earlier about Memphis and Golden State. That series tied at 1 as well. Ja Morant, 26.3 points per game, 6 assists, 5 boards, and just under 2 steals so far in the playoffs. And these have been close games. 117-116, a Golden State victory, 106-101 Memphis. So this is a series to watch. And I'm not going to sit there and go all the way and say that the winner of this series is a team that will probably play in the NBA Finals. But the battles that these two teams are participating in are the kinds of games that galvanize players and teams in the playoffs and maybe allow them to suffer the blows that they need to suffer in order to make it to the finals. I don't know if you feel the same way, but I really think that whoever comes out of this series is going to be battle tested and going to give a team a really big run in the Western Conference Finals.
Oh, I agree. Both of these teams are super talented. I like Memphis, that young team, although it's fun to watch Golden State, see those guys healthy again after Clay being hurt the last couple of years, see how good they are when they're all three back together again is kind of fun. It'd be kind of neat to see Golden State win one more with the three of them healthy and back together again. So we'll see what happens. Quick NBA note, knowing that you're a huge Bulls fan, have you seen the rumors today that the Bulls may be working on a Bradley Beal trade that would send Beal to Chicago?
That would – be very exciting because that would give us another St. Louis connection locally and for the Bulls in general, because, I mean, I'm a big Bulls fan. I was obviously a Bulls fan because of Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen and all those guys. So to have him potentially be up there, that would be incredible. And I think that would be another bucket list trip that we need to add to our already growing schedule of things that we want to go do as a show. So maybe we can get up there next year if that trade happens and see a Bulls Grizzlies game and just really go for broke in that instance, or a Bulls Celtics game. That would be better, I think. I would be excited to see that happen. I don't know what the pieces would be going back, and that would be a little bit scary. Because the Bulls do have some really good pieces right now that you may have to give one of those guys up in order to get a guy like Bradley Beal. But definitely something that we'll be watching in the offseason as well. Obviously, the Bulls didn't make it past the first round, but they got back into the playoffs. So that's a step in the right direction for them. And they're another one of those teams that's on the rise in the NBA, especially in the Eastern Conference. And once again, it just goes back to the theme of how we started the show. You know, Midwest sports is really just starting to continue to rise up a little bit more. I mean, we didn't talk about the Brewers. They're in first place in the Central. They're our rivals, so we don't really want to talk about them too much, but it is still a Midwestern team. And yeah, to see them playing well is really good as well. I mean, the Cubs, you know what? The Chicago teams outside the Bulls, we'll just forget about them. They don't exist in the Midwest right now. But if they do have relevance, we're going to talk about them as well, because that's what this show is really about. We're really trying to make it about the Midwest, because we're flyover country. I mean, everything is East Coast, West Coast. You're seeing that by the fact that the Blues start at 8:30 tonight. It's a Midwest game, and they're starting at 8:30. It's a Friday night, so it's okay. But the Monday, Wednesday thing at 8:30 between Minnesota and St. Louis, come on. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to change that bias. We're trying to get the Midwest back out there, and hopefully we're going to be able to do that very, very soon.
That is the goal.
All right, you got anything else before we head out tonight and watch some epic Blues and Cardinals games?
I think that's it, man. Everybody just go out, enjoy some baseball, enjoy some hockey. Enjoy your mothers on Sunday, in case you don't remember or have forgotten. It's Mother's Day, so enjoy your mothers, your wives. All of the ladies out there, have a very special day on Sunday.
Yes, most definitely. I mean, we wouldn't be here without our mothers, and they've done, a pretty good job raising both of us. So definitely thank them for everything that they've done, and make sure you celebrate them as well on Monday for sure.
Sunday.
What did I say? Monday?
Monday. Yeah.
Man.
You're a day late if you're celebrating them on Monday.
Hey, dude, I'm going to the Blues game on Sunday. I'll probably be celebrating on Monday. So yeah, don't tell my brother's wife or our mother that him and I are going to the Blues game on Sunday, so Mother's Day might be celebrated a day late.
They'll figure it out when you guys aren't around on Sunday.
I don't know. My brother's a real estate agent. He's usually never around on Sundays anyway.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
All right, guys. Enjoy tonight. Celebrate, but celebrate responsibly. Make sure you do the right thing when you're out and about celebrating the games tonight. And make sure you come back and check us out next week. We'll be recapping what went down this weekend between the Blues and Wild, the Cardinals and Giants, and get you prepared for whatever is happening in Midwest sports here on the Toasted Tavern. For Scott Tobin, I am Wags. Thank you guys for joining us, and have a great night.
Hey, it's you, man, here from Casey. For all your sports news, catch the Toasted Tavern with Scott Tobin and the man called Wags weeknights at 9 p.m. You can follow Toasted Tavern on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Let's get toasted.